God put this power to work in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the age to come. Ephesians chapter 1, verses 20 and 21. Hey everybody, I'm Chris Dowd.
And I'm Reagan Gilliland.
And this is Off Script, a podcast where every week we take a deeper dive on last Sunday's sermon, talk about the theology behind it, and get a chance to talk about anything that might have ended up on the cutting room floor. And we are just a few days away from Thanksgiving, which is super exciting. So we're talking about Christ the King Sunday.
Yeah. So I'm very excited. It was a really good sermon. I don't know. I'm trying to think if we've done Christ the King, if I've done that before.
Have you not?
I don't think so. I don't know. Again, I was always in like modern worship.
Yeah, yeah. Right. This is what you get when you get a former Catholic who's kind of shaping the liturgical year.
Yeah, but I like it. I feel like I'm learning a lot. Okay, so he just almost spat out his coffee. It's fine. all right. So I first want to talk about how, okay, you opened the sermon talking about, can you believe it's been 8 months since this pandemic?
Yeah, eight plus.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in some ways, March seems like an eternity ago. And then in other ways, it seems like it was yesterday, especially now that everything's feeling a little out of control, coronavirus-wise, anyway. Yeah. I mean, the kids are still in school, which is good.
Yeah.
But Sam had to quarantine for a couple weeks for, you know, because of an exposure in his class. And, you know, Max had like a little scare in his class. I mean, it's a crazy world. But yes, 8 months we've been dealing with this.
Yeah. And I know my daughter's like, Christmas is so soon. And I'm like, it is so soon. And I feel like, how did we get here? Like, time is so weird how it's like so slow and so fast
right?
at the
exactly.
same time. And you talked about how when you made that, when you and Don made the announcement that you were going to online, that you thought we'd be back in the sanctuary by Easter.
I just couldn't.
But I remember that people on like the clergy page were like, it's going to be so awesome on Easter.
Yeah, it would be like homecoming, right? Yeah, and, you know, Don, who is very wise, extremely well-read, and like just stays on, as particularly with regard to the coronavirus, was very on top of all the, still is, on top of all the research and what's going on. He's like, man, we're not going to be back by Easter. Like, get out of here. And here's the other thing. He and I were in the middle of the transition, you know, and so it's been a crazy 8 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you make a joke how you're glad you're a preacher, not a prophet.
Right.
So let's talk about what else you're wrong about.
Okay. All right. That's not a long list. It won't take long.
Ooh, I'm going to call Whitney and put her on speaker. Does she
I
keep
think
a
my
list?
My son would call that a flex.
Oh.
I think that's what the kids are calling it.
Flex. I need to write this down. I don't know any lingo.
And like he and I are So he had basketball tryouts this morning, and so we had been doing a lot of one-on-one and drills in the backyard. We got a hoop in the backyard, and so I tried to trash talk in the way that a 14-year-old today would trash talk.
Yeah.
And I think it humors him more than anything else. So
yeah.
Anyway, yeah. That was a trash talk thing I just did there.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, got it.
My game is not strong.
Burn.
There's also roast.
Oh,
a roast is apparently different than a burn.
Oh,
a flex is different than a, what's the other word? There's all these terms now.
Yeah. My daughter likes to say boom roasted after jokes.
Boom roasted?
Yeah. She'll go boom roasted.
Is that a thing or is that a mistake that she makes?
No, I think it's an actual phrase, but it's hilarious when she does it.
Well, so, so then there's this other thing. I don't understand video games really. Like kids love Minecraft. Mm-hmm. And so I called Sam down to do something. Sam's our 9-year-old, or I guess he's 10 now, for anybody who's listening and doesn't know who Sam is. Anyway, he says, okay, he's talking on his headphones to friends in Sherman, I think. He's like, I'm going to be AFK for a while. I'm like, AFK? And I'm thinking, geez, do I need to monitor his filthy language?
Yeah.
No, it means away from keyboard. And apparently in Minecraft, that's the thing. Like, you go, like, you can have your things in Minecraft continue to like generate mining? I don't even know. But AFK apparently is something the kids are saying too.
AFK. Mm-hmm. All right. Learning so many things this morning. Okay, so I guess we should talk about the sermon. That was fun. Okay, so it was Christ the King, which is the end of our liturgical
right.
year. And so I started to think, is this like our New Year's
Eve? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Less, yeah. Not as cool, not as fun.
I hate New Year's Eve, so.
What?
I think it's so lame.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this because you're a young mom, you stay home with the kids? Or have you always felt this way?
I just think it's just like, you just stay up late and then you're like, okay. And then you just go to sleep. Like, I don't know. I also just like to sleep, so I don't really want to stay up late.
We've gotten to the stage of our life. We don't have a bunch of New Year's Eve plans, you know. We've moved a couple times, so we don't have like these long-standing traditions.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got traditions with the family and stuff around certain holidays, but we're finding ourselves trying to figure out what to do New Year's Eve. I mean, this year, like...
Pretty sure I'll just be in.
Right, exactly. Sitting at home in a mask.
Yay.
And not the fun New Year's Eve kind of mask.
No.
Yeah.
Just an old-fashioned mask. So, can you talk to us about how, if we talk about how it's, the calendar is spaced out, or divided up, I guess, and how that should influence us or inform us of where maybe our mind should be, I guess.
Yeah, and so this is... I love the liturgical year. I love the flow of it. I love the rhythm of it. I think there's so much theology packed into it, and that you could spend a whole lifetime exploring it in different ways every year and not exhaust all the possibilities of what's going on in the liturgical year. There's a great book by Joan Chittister, who is a Benedictine, I believe, nun. Catholic nun, about the theology of the liturgical year. And, you know, growing up in the Catholic tradition, which is a very liturgical tradition, you get to see the changing of, like, we don't have, in our sanctuary, like, paraments. We don't have altar cloths and pulpit mm-hmm. cloths that match the stoles and all that. But obviously you do in the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church. And so you have this visual reminder of the changing of the seasons, which I think is pretty cool. But then that matches the theology of the church. And so Christ the King is the most recent official date in the church's calendar. Easter was probably the first one. Epiphany is very old. Epiphany is older than Christmas. Pentecost is very old. Mm-hmm. And pretty early on in the early centuries of the church, the basic pattern was set: Advent, Christmas, the season after Epiphany, Lent, Easter, they call it Paschal Tide or Easter Tide, the season of Easter, mm-hmm. Pentecost. And that flow kind of mirrors the incarnation. So the year starts with Advent, anticipating the birth of the King, which we'll talk about next week. He's born. Then we remember his baptism. And then there's some number of weeks between then and preparing for the Passion, which is the other kind of bookend celebration. So Easter and Christmas are the two guideposts for the year.
Okay.
And then Christ the King, it started as in the Catholic Church, as most of these things do, in the 1920s, Pope Pius the something, seventh or something like that, instituted this day because at that time, you know, the world had just had the turmoil of World War I. It was like the world was feeling very unsettled, which we can all relate to.
Yeah,
right?
Sounds familiar.
And so he instituted late in the liturgical year. It didn't become officially the last Sunday of the liturgical year until a little bit later. This notion that we need to remind ourselves once a year. I mean, we spend most of the year talking about his teachings and parables and. Mm-hmm. The way he modeled his life, but then there is this bottom line that Christ is King yesterday, today, and forever. And to intentionally remind ourselves of that at least once a year is a good thing. It's a good practice.
Yeah.
Now, the way the calendar falls, we won't always celebrate Christ the King Sunday. If like this year, we probably wouldn't have this year, honestly. I like to have the Sunday before Thanksgiving be Thanksgiving Sunday. I think I just feel like, even though Thanksgiving is technically a secular holiday, like a civil holiday, reminding ourselves to be grateful is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So I prefer to emphasize that. But in a year that felt so out of control for so many reasons, it felt like a good reminder. So we pushed Thanksgiving up, mm-hmm. and then did Christ the King this year.
Yeah. No, I liked learning. So you said it started in like the 1920s. So mm-hmm. do we always, because I don't know, maybe a listener. So does, like, if there was going to be another tradition, like, does the Methodist Church take the lead from different denominations, or mm-hmm. like, how does, or maybe you don't know, how does that work?
So, it's a really good question. So it started as a Catholic, holiday, but then there was this movement in the 70s, 80s, 90s, where all of the mainline Protestant traditions, so Lutherans, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, Methodists, Disciples of Christ, the ones that are liturgical, mm-hmm. not every Christian church is liturgical,
right?
But the ones that celebrate the sacraments and that have this these close connections to the Roman Church or the Western Church, decided to come together for what was called the lectionary at first, and then it became the Revised Common Lectionary. They updated it in the early 90s, and that's when the calendar was set for good.
Okay.
You know, if you talk to retired pastors, Methodist pastors, the liturgical movement in the Methodist Church is within their lifetime.
Okay.
So we learned it in seminary, in Word and Worship, you know, mm-hmm. About the rhythm of the calendar and all that. Of course, I grew up with it, so it wasn't foreign to me. But Joe Ed Goolsby, he's a retired pastor on staff in Sherman, and it always surprised me when... Like he's a really funny guy, and he would make comments like, "Oh, there's the Catholic coming out in you." And I'm like, "No, it's right here in the Book of Worship." But he would, like, when he was in seminary, that wasn't something that was emphasized. So
yeah.
It's a relatively recent development.
Okay. And just, so you talked about the colors and the Catholic Church, how the whole, like, you could see all the colors changing. So I know sometimes we wear different color stoles. So we wear, talk about when we wear white stoles.
Yeah, so the liturgical colors, so purple is the color of royalty. That's the season of Advent and Lent. Some people do it wrong and have blue during Advent.
Is Jason listening?
No, I think Jason's on board. Paul Miletic, our youth
minister.
Oh, yeah,
he wants a blue, but Jason wants us to wear more red.
Yeah, right. Jason likes his red stuff, but red is only really the color of Pentecost. So there was a time when you celebrated, like my old boss at Arapaho, Jack Soper, we would wear red for several weeks after Pentecost because it just felt like the right thing to do, mm-hmm. even though technically you go green. See, I think Trinity Sunday is the Sunday after Pentecost. Is that right? So I think you go red for Pentecost, white for Trinity Sunday. I think I might have that not exactly right. But anyway, you go into green pretty quickly thereafter. Then you're in green for half the year because green is the color of what's called ordinary time. So the season after Epiphany is green. The season after Pentecost is green. And then white is the color for the high holy days, to use a Catholic phrase. So Easter and the Easter season, Christmas and the Christmas season, which is very short, 12 days. Mm-hmm. It's the color for Epiphany. It's also the color for sacraments. So when we, like, typically we'll wear those when we celebrate a baptism or a Holy Communion.
Yeah.
And that's also the color of resurrection because of Easter. And so, like for a funeral, you would wear white.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love our sanctuary. I think our sanctuary is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I thought that long before I got here. We have not incorporated those visuals, in the midst of our, like in our, as part of our practice mm-hmm. in our sanctuary. I wouldn't hate it if we did, just because I think it's a good visual reminder of the season and all that. So that may be something down the line, but at least the stoles change to match the liturgical season.
Yes. And then Jason colors his buttons on his robe to match. So
because they don't come in.
They don't come in the color.
All the colors. I think
I think white and red.
Oh, red was the other one?
I think so.
Okay.
And then he had.
I couldn't remember if it was green or.
And then he had a colored. Yeah, I think. Don't quote me on that. But anyway,
his robe is very Matrix-ish.
It is very Matrix.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
Chad McSwain, mm-hmm. who.
Oh yeah, I've seen his. Yep.
He's got that same kind of high collar. Mm-hmm. It's like an Anglican look.
Yeah.
I was always a little bit jealous of that. I've got the traditional, like robes in general are a product of the Reformation. So yeah. They're actually, what do they call them? Academic robes, basically. So I've got the Jerusalem cross. I don't know if it's embossed or whatever in black appliqued on the panels mm-hmm. of my robe, but it's not nearly as slimming as those yes. Anglican robes.
Yeah. I have mine that's more fitted, and then I have one that has the sleeves like yours that I wear when I'm pregnant because I can't zip the other one. So,
that's funny.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. So Christ the King is kind of, it's such a good Sunday to do before Advent. It's really preparing because it's reminding us, you know, kind of what is to come, mm-hmm. who Christ is. Mm-hmm. So are there any other things that you do to prepare your heart for Advent? Whether it's, do you visit the same devotion or is there practice that you do to make sure you're ready?
So, you know, I've done different things over the years. Early on in the season of Advent, it was encouraged for a clergy. I'm talking about early on, like in the 5th and 6th centuries, okay. like a long time ago. Advent really did kind of closely mirror Lent. So there was fasting and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, which is one of my favorite Advent carols, was actually intended to be chanted. There are 7 verses chanted on the 7 days leading up to Christmas. So that, like deep in the tradition, there's all these kind of embedded ways to recognize Advent. I don't want Advent to be like Lent. I'm not interested in fasting during Advent. Personally, I mean, it's not a bad practice, but mm-hmm. in practice, probably not a bad practice considering how commercialized the holiday has become. But to me, I don't know, the more celebration, the better is my opinion on that.
Okay.
I don't know. So do you have special Advent devotionals that you,
because
you're going to be teaching something about Advent.
I am going to be teaching. Yeah. I need to explore. Richard Rohr talks about something so with like the 9 days December is like starts with the N and talking and they're really talking about the wisdom coming and so I kind of want to explore a little bit more about that mm-hmm. but that won't start till December 16th but
right.
So I don't know I'm looking at obviously there's advent calendars things you do with your kids but
yeah
I don't know
so in both Sherman and Henrietta we always got a advent devotional like bought a devotional for the church to use. And so I've always read those along with the church. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Lent for me. You know, Lent, I've got a very specific kind of routine that I follow.
Okay.
And Advent, I don't know. It should be fun. It should be like watching Christmas movies and baking cookies and getting ready for the best night of the year, which is Christmas Eve. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let's go ahead and get, I guess, to the scripture, and then I might ask you a different question later. But so your scripture was Ephesians 1:15-23. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular verses in that you really just love? Were there points that didn't make it into the sermon?
So he starts out, I left out kind of the Thanksgiving at the beginning, just because we had done Thanksgiving the week before. Like in verse 16, he says, I do not cease to give thanks for you as I remember you in my prayers. Well, this probably is not Paul, by the way.
Right.
It's written in Paul's name, but it's probably later than that. And the reason that matters in this particular case is that, you know, the early years of the church were kind of uncertainty and this kind of fervent period of evangelization. And then once the church settles in, to its life in the empire, then it starts to experience like persecution at the hands of Rome. Romans were very suspicious of Christians. So the deeper you get into the first century, the farther you get into the first century, the more poignant it is to me when the authors try to encourage us in the midst of suffering, because it's not a theoretical thing for them. Mm-hmm. So when you're a persecuted minority at the hands of an all-powerful empire, the notion that Christ is king is like this, is an essential part of theology. I mean, for us now, I mean, we are the empire.
Yep.
Right. I mean, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but we, it's there, it doesn't cost us anything to be Christians. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a muted emphasis that we have on Christ the King, or Christ the King takes on a different kind of meaning. Like in the first century, to say Christ is King means that Caesar is not. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to worry if Caesar is killing your family and friends, because ultimately he's going to get his. That's what the theology of Christ the King is all about. That's what, that was a significant emphasis of the second coming. So, now it means something different. Like it's more of a spiritualized, thing for us, so that even in the midst of the hardship of pandemic, death, suffering, loss, addiction, I mean, fill in the blank of the darkness in our lives, the notion that Christ is King means that ultimately he, like there's, it's the verse that we read at the top of the podcast. So God put, verse 20, God put this power to work in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, and above every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in the age to come. Like Christ is ultimately in charge of all things, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean that Christ makes all things like that. God doesn't act in such a way that our life is awesome all the time. Mm-hmm. But it means that whether in this life or in the life to come, all shall be well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always wonder if, thinking of Christ as King, if it's such a foreign concept to us just because we don't have kings, you know, like for a long time, that's who ruled. And if there's just right. kind of a disconnect with that. I don't know.
Well, I think it probably,
not that the queen really does anything, but, you know, like.
Well, I mean, there's an art, right. I mean, it probably is a whole separate podcast about the gender-specific language.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Jesus was a guy. I mean, that's a whole separate thing. Yeah. But I think, I don't know. I'm not sure if this is, I don't know if my experience of this is unusual or what. But I love all of the Christmas carols that talk about, like, let earth receive her king. Like, that, even though we don't have one, even though that's not our form of government anymore, the notion of Christ as king is just, I don't know. It's just really assuring to me, reassuring mm-hmm. to me. There's a modern worship song, How Many Kings, by, what's the name? I can't remember the group, but it takes the three kings story from the Magi story from okay. Matthew. And then kind of does a flip and talk about what the true king has done for us. Mm. Like all that kind of language. I don't know if it's just a powerful metaphor for me or reassuring or whatever. I don't know if everyone feels that way, but because I love that kind of imagery in my Christmas carols,
yeah.
Christ the King Sunday is meaningful because is more meaningful or especially meaningful or something. Because like we're looking forward to the arrival anew of the one who will ultimately set all things right. It's just, awesome. Yeah. It's so good. The theology is so good.
I was hoping you were going to maybe talk about Hamilton and the King. I thought that was kind of a softball, but you know, because we don't have kings and queens, you know, there's a disconnect, but when you read history and you think like, gosh, the kings really did have a lot of power, like they were impacted. Mm-hmm. And I think when you think about how much power they had and you equate and you look at Christ who has even more, I think, I don't know. I just think sometimes we don't acknowledge the power and the reign of Christ often enough. I just think those are terms we don't use a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And I think at the end of this particular year, it's especially helpful, comforting.
Yeah.
When Christ does sing, he does not spit like Jonathan Groff does.
No.
I'm sure of it.
Sure of it. Yeah.
It's in Leviticus.
Okay. So how would you tell someone or show someone that Christ still reigns today?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I don't think you can show anyone.
Okay.
What's the, faith is the assurance of things not yeah. seen, right? So I think, to me, this is probably going to harken back to Thanksgiving Sunday, but if you, like last week we talked about how in Philippians 4, Paul talks about the peace that passes, mm-hmm. peace that surpasses all understanding, that can be ours even in the most difficult circumstances. I think having that kind of peace, having that kind of serenity is evidence
yeah.
that Christ reigns. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if we can all be approaching our modified Thanksgiving dinners this year, mm-hmm. With an assurance that everything's going to be okay somehow, that's to me is evidence
yeah.
of the reign of Christ.
Yeah.
How would you?
Well, I think,
like let's say it was a brand new Christian, somebody just joining the church and you guys are using all this King language. Like, what does that mean? Cause you can also say reign of Christ Sunday instead of King,
yeah.
Christ King Sunday.
I mean, I think because we get so bogged down with a lot of the negativity and bad, you know, I still point to so much good. And so when I see the good in the world, when I see, you know, even when I see justice and just things like that, I think, man, there's still this great power that's still mm-hmm. clearly at work in the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would just point to that and just say, hey, this is going to win in the end. And so I probably just focus on that.
I would also say that, just to get super personal about it. So anyone who's conquered an addiction or alcoholism or anything like that, who had this thing that they couldn't stop mm-hmm. and now they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
In 12-step language, that like a power higher than ourselves is doing that for us. Mm-hmm. that is like daily proof of the reign of Christ.
Yeah.
For anybody. I mean, that's a very specific audience that we'd be talking to there.
Yeah.
But I think that's pretty good evidence too.
No, that's great. So you do a quote about how all is right with the world. So how, maybe you've already talked about this a little bit, but how are things still all right in the world for you with the world?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, like.
Where do you start?
No, I mean, for me, it's all about my wife and kids
yeah.
and my relationship with God and a church that I love. Like, you know, this year has felt oftentimes like apocalyptic is probably a little bit of an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. But when the entire world shut down for extended periods of time, mm-hmm. like when light pollution from space was less than it used to be, and uh-huh. when wildlife started reclaiming, like it got quasi-apocalyptic there for a while. But I was still coming to the church, and we were still proclaiming the gospel, and I still, you know, woke up in a house with my wife and children, and had my health, and so it was different. It was hard. Still will be for a while. It yeah. looks like until those vaccines get widely distributed, but. You know, that's the Robert Browning quote from mm-hmm. the sermon, God's in his heaven. And I'm not crazy about the gender specific language, but it's Robert Browning, a different yeah. era. God's in his heaven and all's right with the world. Like the fact, what I did with that in the sermon is that the fact that Christ reigns means that everything is going to be okay in the end. Mm-hmm. And it may not look like I had anticipated it would look, it may be harder than we want it to be, but it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You also talk about this church, specifically Christ United mm-hmm. has gone through enormous change and then the pandemic. And I think in general, I feel like Christians still have such a hard time with change, even though I feel like our call, you know, we're supposed to be open to change mm-hmm. all the time, the Holy Spirit moving and, so I think for us, this year has been a good reminder of like a lot of things needed to change. So maybe we haven't allowed Christ to reign much because we've been so just, this is how it's going to be. Nothing changed, nothing moved. And I don't know, I think as hard as this year has been, and mine's been pretty easy, like I'll admit that. I think part of it's been really good for us. I don't know.
So you're bringing up an interesting point because, you know, being resistant to change has a whole lot to do with control.
Yeah.
We like to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, the fact that Christ reigns is comforting. On the other hand, it's those old two theological truths. There is a God and it's not me.
Yep.
And so there are times, maybe most of the time, when my job is to participate in what God's doing and not try to be in charge of life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt like it was important to name all the change here at the church because there's been a lot.
Yeah.
My previous career was, one of my previous careers was as a consultant, and change management was our thing. And there's a concept where every organization only has a certain reservoir, like a certain capacity for change. And at some point it's too much. And it becomes disruptive and it becomes destructive to some organizations. I don't think the amount of change we've dealt with this year has been destructive, but it's certainly pushed us about to the limits of our capacity to manage it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, people get, when I say people, I'm including myself in that. I'm not saying they, it's not like the congregation's been difficult. I think all of us get to a place where, we get a sense of anxiety, we get a sense of dis-ease, we get a sense of grumpiness, we get a sense of reactivity that is in some ways proportional to external factors that we don't have any control over. So when you layer on, I mean, we knew Don's retirement was coming for a while. The church planned for it exceedingly well. Mm-hmm. And he and I did a whole year handoff, which went just exceedingly well. And that's a real testament to his leadership and the senior leadership, the later leadership of the church. But that's still hard. You know, I mean, you have the spiritual leader of a congregation that's been doing it for 37 years. And when that presence is he's still around, right? I mean, he's still, you know, his office is down the hall doing donor relations stuff. And which is a tremendous comfort for me, by the way. But he's not visible. And so when that change happens, then you can think of it as a mobile, like you'd hang over a baby's crib.
Yeah.
Like when that piece starts moving, well, the whole mobile starts moving. And then you have like other people leave, like Chad gets sent to a new appointment. And so Table of Grace is now feeling kind of this double sense of change. Pat Messick, who had been doing our music for longer than Don had been here, left. And so, you know, Jason's wonderful, but he's different and it's just a lot. And so that was already going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden people can't be in church for extended periods of time. So I'm actually amazed that the congregation has remained, stable and engaged and healthy as it has.
Yeah.
Given everything that life has thrown at us over the past year. Yeah. And so on Sunday, when I said, look, I have all the confidence in the world that we're going to emerge on the other side of this thing stronger and more vital. But wow, it's like training for a marathon. I mean, you have to do the 20-mile run and you feel like you're going to die in the middle of the 20-mile run, but then you get to finish the marathon. You know what I mean? Like, so,
I don't know what you mean because I'm not a runner, but okay, cool. That sounds terrible.
Like, well, you know, fill in the blank with whatever your, you know, whatever thing you have to train for.
Yeah.
Athletic endeavor or preaching a sermon or whatever. It's all the work you go through that's really challenging that makes that final product possible. You know, I just think the other side of the pandemic is going to be, it's just going to be so good when the vaccine's widely distributed and we have 90% of the people in-house rather than online and things are back to normal. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. And even through all of that, all the change, Christ still reigns.
Christ is still king.
You know? So it's good news.
It's really, literally, it's the gospel.
It's the gospel. Yeah. Okay. So real fast. So we're closing the church next week to give us a break.
Yes.
So thank you for that. I know in our last podcast, you talked about some of your traditions that you do on Thanksgiving Day, but do you have any fun plans this week with your kids since they're out, you're off?
Yeah. So, it's been insane, right? I mean, the schedule, the pace.
Yes.
And so just to peel the curtain back, we're recording this. So when you said next week, you're talking about the week people are listening to this. So Thanksgiving week, the office is closed.
Yeah.
And, we have not yet done Max's birthday party. He turned 14 early in November. And so we're going to go to, the plan is to go to Six Flags and do Holiday in the Park.
Oh, okay.
We'll probably do some Top Golf.
Yeah.
We are not going to do the big family gathering. We're going to follow CDC guidelines on that. And so we're doing everything just the four of us at home, which I'm kind of, I mean, like I'm going to miss the family.
Sure.
But it's kind of exciting to do all those things.
So who cooks, you or Whitney or both?
Both of us. Yeah, okay. Both of us. So that'll be good. And then, you know, all the Christmas decorations will be up very early in the week. Tree's already up, but we'll put all the other stuff up. So how about y'all?
Yeah, so we're hoping to, so we looked at getting a, renting a tiny house for one night, but then they kind of got booked up. So we're looking, going at another time. But we're going to try to go to that pie shop. That's your aunt.
My aunt, Piefalutin.
Yeah, that's your aunt. No, it's in Garland. And I know it's going to be rainy some days, but we might do some like parks or I don't know if we'll do the zoo or something. Just kind of hang out. We also need to get all of our Christmas stuff out. And we're finishing Andy's platform that was built in our backyard. So we need to add a rock climbing wall to that and things like that.
That sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The Irish play on Friday, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let me write that down.
Yeah. Plug that in.
Yep. Writing it down.
At North Carolina, big game.
Okay.
Yeah. College football playoff implications.
Well, it sounds like a good week. Okay. Well, as always, great talking with you. Any final things you want to say to our congregation?
No, I think that is about a wrap for Christ the King Sunday and a wrap on the liturgical year of 2020.
There we go.
Praise God.
Bye-bye.
Next week is Advent. So, I guess to everyone listening, have a wonderful Thanksgiving with whoever you're celebrating. May your holiday be a blessed one and be an assuring one and a gratitude-filled one. And we will look forward to being with you next week again for Off Script. It'll be Advent 1 next week, which is going to be awesome. Thanks, y'all. God bless.